Stillman & Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. Titans have made it official. They've released wide receiver Adam Humphries, and they've parted ways with defensive backs Chris Milton and Breon Borders. Milton, more of a special teams guy. Borders was basically a practice squad guy last year, but they are no longer here. The Humphries move was expected, but it's 3 o'clock, which means it's the TD Power Hour. Teron Davenport, ESPN. TD, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, man. How you doing?
I am doing well. Let's start first with the reaction to the Adam Humphries move. This, to me, may be the least surprising move the Titans will probably make of the entire offseason, or maybe the most expected move. And Humphries suffered the concussion last year, was never the same after it, did not live up to the billing in the two seasons. He did some good things, but injuries really just kind of kept him from being what I think they had really envisioned him being for Mariota and Tannehill over the last 2 years. That is not a surprising move. Your reaction to it?
No, it's not a surprising move at all. This is something that we expected to happen. And as you mentioned, there were some things that went into it. The concussion issue. I mean, when John Robinson spoke about Adam Humphries, he said that they were monitoring, you know, his progress and in contact with doctors. There wasn't any definitive answer as far as whether he would retire or play this season. So, hey, it is what it is. Humphries, though, when he was here, I mean, and on the field, a very reliable target, one of his best plays, in my opinion. Well, there's two. You know, the one that I really think about when I mention Adam Humphries is the touchdown that he had against the Bucks, and that really just kind of, and that's in 2019, it just kind of sparked this team into, you know, that run that they had. And then you also think about the touchdown he had against the Jaguars, the and one from Ryan Tannehill. So Humphries, man, he's tough as a $5 steak. And he's a guy that, you know, was difficult to cover. I remember watching him give those DBs fits and one-on-ones during camp. And it's just unfortunate because he's one of those guys that you do root for because he's truly a really good dude. And he's someone that, you know, you hope that he'll be all right as far as going forward. And it's a move, as you said, that was expected.
You know, I also would say to throw into that, don't forget his game winner against the Chiefs. You know, in 2019.
That's the one. Know. Not the Bucks. It was the Chiefs. Excuse me. It was
Chiefs. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, because I knew he had a big one against the Bucks when they played him earlier that season, but that one against the Chiefs, I mean, that was kind of the one where it was like, hey, Tannehill, you know, he might be the guy here.
Yeah.
So, TD, I've been playing general manager on the radio all week. I'm gonna turn it over to you. I'm going to let you lay this out. Instead of TD, you are GM, and you're the Titans, and now I think – both you and I would have released Adam Humphries as well. But how are you prioritizing the offseason right now if you're John Robinson, knowing that the cap is probably 182, 183, knowing that you're going to have holes to fill, knowing that you're going to, if you want to squeeze on certain guys, there's going to be some work that has to get done behind the scenes. How are you prioritizing the offseason right now if you're John Robinson?
Yeah, well, I think it all starts with pass rush. It's all about pay. You got to get somebody that can impact and affect the quarterback. So that's the first thing that I'm looking to address. Now, as I'm looking to address that, I'm kind of looking at things horizontally, whereas, okay, how can I put myself in the best position possible to be able to get the best guy for what we need to do? And that being said, I would release a guy like Adam Humphries. I'm going to look at other ways and restructure, but I am absolutely going pass rush first. And whether that's Bud Dupree, whether that's Carl Lawson, who would be my primary target, Romeo Okwara, Trey Hendrickson, I'm bringing one of those guys in. And then I'm going to look at J.J. Watt. I'm going to think about that decision, but I'm going to say, you know what, I'm going to go Ryan Kerrigan and get a high-effort guy who's very similar to J.J. Watt, but just a few years younger, and that will be less expensive.
How does that then play on the offensive side of the ball? Because, you know, Chris Sanders yesterday, and I love Chris Sanders, and I wonder if it's like the Titans receivers brotherhood, because he just cannot let Corey Davis walk out the door. And I mean, I think Corey Davis is a good player, but I mean, Chris is talking about franchise tagging Corey Davis. I'm like, whoa now.
Yeah.
Like, and maybe because he was kind of that guy on the Titans back in the day. D. Mace was on one side. He was on the other. Eddie George was running. And now you got, you know, A.J. Brown's on the other side. And Derrick Henry's in the backfield. And so I see it. But I'm with you. Pass rusher first. It would be wrong, though, to not try to think about how to fill the other side of the ball on offense.
Well, context is always key, and that's what I'm asking you to have when you talk about what Chris Sanders said. He's not saying pay him $16 million this upcoming year. He's saying franchise tag him, so this way you have exclusive negotiating rights. It's very important that you understand that part of it, right? And I mm-hmm. think from that perspective, it absolutely makes sense. Me personally, I'm tagging Jonnu Smith. That's what I would do. But I get the importance that Corey Davis has. And I think, you know, from a analytical side of things, you have to understand coverage is going to roll to A.J. Brown's side yep. because he is just frankly that guy in the passing game. You have to have someone on the opposite side that's going to eat up one-on-one coverage, that's going to make teams pay and think twice about putting so much on A.J. Brown. That's where Corey Davis comes into play. The game I would suggest watching is the Bengals game, going against William Jackson, who will be a free agent, and that's going to really dictate, you know, what happens with Carl Lawson and Cincy. But watch that game, and it was no coincidence that Corey Davis had an outstanding game. He beat him twice on two big plays. So, for me, that's the importance of Corey Davis, and that's why I could fully understand what Chris Sanders is saying, because he's looking at it from a, okay, big picture type of view.
So, when I guess kind of – I totally agree, right? If you sign, if you tag a Jonnu Smith. Now, I think transition would probably make more sense for Jonnu than the franchise. But,
well, yeah. I've said multiple times I would transition tag him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But the tough part about, say, and I understand what Chris is talking about. You're talking about exclusive negotiating rights. I'm just saying, if I'm Corey Davis and the Titans want to work out a deal with me and they use the franchise tag to keep me from getting out to the market, I'll discuss a long-term deal with them, but now I feel like I have them over the barrel, because if worse comes to worse, I get my $16 million. And that's the position that I just feel like the Titans can't put themselves in. It's like the opposite of Derrick Henry last year, where the Titans, you know, totally used the tag to their advantage to lower what they had to give Derrick, whereas I think if you use the tag on Davis, you're kind of now playing in his game, because he's got to get his number down, which means give me more signing bonus, give me, you know, the kind of money I want over a long-term deal, or you got a $16 million cap charge on your hands. And well, I just feel like that's a hard spot to be in if you're the Titans.
Here's the thing. It's a hard spot to be in if other teams, which are surely going to have interest in this man, are bidding against you. That's a hard spot too. What you have to understand is that, you know, they can tag him, but you also have to understand it's more than just money, right? And I think Corey Davis is going to look at it from that perspective, especially a guy like him having been in the wrong situation for 3 years. 3 years, he knows what it's like to be in the wrong situation where you can't really showcase your ability. What happens if he picks the Bears and they don't make a move with quarterback and he's with Mitchell Trubisky? What happens? Yeah, he'll have a bunch of money, but that wanting to get to that level that he knows he could get to, it's not really going to be that possible in that offense with Mitchell, Fripp, and Trubisky as the quarterback. So you have to look at that too. He finally had a year in a scheme and in a program and in a setup, personnel-wise, everything, with a quarterback that finally targets him frequently. It's finally a good situation for him. I think that holds a lot of value, and that's going to be heavy in the negotiating stand of things as well.
Is it going to be possible to bring back both Smith and Davis?
I don't think it's possible to do that and improve the pass rush. I think it really is going to come down, unless these guys are taking totally team-friendly deals. You know what I mean? I don't see mm-hmm. it being possible.
I mean, the thing I was thinking about listening to John Clayton was when he brought up the low eights for Jonnu. I'm like, you know, you could do that with a signing bonus and basically have almost no base salary this year for Jonnu, where all you're paying is the signing bonus that's spread out over the next 4 years. And then by years 3 and 4, that base salary goes way up and you then probably have an out after the third year. I think mm-hmm. that may make sense to bring Jonnu back if it's an $8 million average, but say you give him a $16 million signing bonus. So it's a $4 million and a, you know, a $1 million salary for this year. So it's a $5 million cap hit. And then you keep the four each year of those four. And at the end, if you end up cutting him, you're still paying the $4 million against the cap. But Jonnu gets a lot of money up front. That, I think, could make sense for the Titans to work out a deal.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, there are some things you could do, some gymnastics from the cap standpoint and number wise to make that fit. I think in this situation, because you also have to remember, this is a different projection. Like originally, you know, at this time last year, they were projecting this cap to be right around, you know, $200 million or so. Right. Mm-hmm. So you're working in a different situation. Obviously, last year financially because of COVID and fans going to games in smaller groups, it messed things up. And that dictated the cap being where it is. But at some point, things are going to get back to normal and you're going to have that balloon cap number. Right. And it's going to go higher. So this is a situation where you could afford to kick the can down the road by way of the negotiations, as far as the renegotiations, pushing, you know, converting numbers and those type of things. And also in these contracts now, as you mentioned with Jonnu Smith.
What do you do, TD, in the secondary? I think, you know, I've said, look, and I love Vaccaro. I do. I think he's a good player. I think he's a good teammate. I think he's a good leader. I think he works hard. I think they love him. I think he's versatile. I think he's athletic. I just think that, you know, you can save some money on Vaccaro. Hooker has played really, really well. And then you've got the two corners in Jackson and Butler, both of whom you could save around $10.2 million on releasing. How would you approach the secondary?
Yeah, I would, you know what, they're going to have to, business is business. I would release Kenny Vaccaro. You have Amani Hooker and Dane Cruikshank waiting in the lurks. I would not bring back Desmond King. I don't want to say overdraft him, but I would prioritize Elijah Molden out of Washington as a guy that I would draft to take over that nickel spot. And then from there, it's thinking long and hard about Butler and Adoree Jackson and going to Butler and just asking him, you know, to renegotiate the deal and shift some things around to save some money. That's the way I would address the secondary. I still have high hopes for Christian Fulton. I think he's an outstanding player. Breon Borders, I thought, was a guy that they could have around. He was sufficient as a depth player, especially, you know, with Ty Smith not coming back. But I think, you know, I'm drafting some corners. There are some guys that you could draft that could help you out on the outside, and it's just Elijah Molden. That's the guy that you're going to rely upon to be your slot if you could get him. But there are other good nickel corners as well. So that's the way I would look at it.
One thing I thought about Butler, his base salary this year at 11.1 is due. He can't get 11.1 on the market, not given the financial circumstances that they have right now. And I hate using that as leverage, but I do think there are some players on the team that it's, hey, your base salary is this year. We can release you. We don't want to release you. We want you on this team. But we can't, Malcolm, we can't give you 11.1, and nobody else in the league would give you 11.1 right now. Do you think that would resonate with a player, or do you think a player would get upset if they were offered that kind of position?
Yeah, I think it would resonate, because you have to understand it is what it is. The truth is the truth. You know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
Also, one last thing on the cap. I do kind of want your opinion on. I have no idea. I'm trying to process Isaiah Wilson because, you know.
Don't try, man. You won't get a headache.
Well, I just don't know what his – I don't know what his cap situation is, right? Like, you know, if everything is straight up, then he's a $5.3 million cap charge to release. He's $2.6 million against the cap on the team. So you would not take an extra $3 million
exactly.
against your cap
exactly.
to release him. But I got to believe by suspending him with conduct detrimental, they're going to void the guarantees. And that feels like something that would go all the way to the union, and there would be a grievance, and there would be, like, it feels like there's a lot of work to figure out how the Isaiah Wilson thing's going to play out.
Yeah, there is a lot of work to figure that out. And as you mentioned, the whole legal process and the grievance and all of that, that is something that is in place to fight situations where it's unnecessary. But, I mean, how can you not say it's necessary in this case, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even let's just forget about the foolishness off the field. Let's talk about on the field. The conditioning was terrible. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. You know what I mean? We could say it like Charles Barkley, right? I think that alone is something that a basic expectation of a professional athlete is to come to camp in shape. I don't know how many camp practice. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I just remember the first camp practice that he was at. We had you on the show that day. You know, TD, what did we see at practice? And you were like, Isaiah Wilson is not going to be ready to play week one.
Exactly. And then, you know what? A week later, like five practices later, you know what week not ready to play in week one turned to? Not ready to play in season one. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
That's even like I'm sitting here sweating and getting hot because of the frustration. I don't have a horse in the daggone race. I could only imagine how people in that building are feeling because, I mean, there has to be a lot of walls that were being punched because of this situation. And it's bad for everybody involved, including his parents. That's another thing that's really sickening. This man came from a solid household. I couldn't imagine having my son out there embarrassing me like this. And I don't mean to bag on the dude, but it is what it is.
I mean, I know I feel bad when I'm out there embarrassing TD, so I can only imagine what it'd be like to be TD's son out there embarrassing TD. TD's with us, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to your phones. What does TD make of the latest J.J. Watt rumors, the Titans ones and the non-Titans ones? And then we're to your phones and your thoughts on free agency with TD, who's with us. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stoneman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game. Ian Rappaport reports NFL Network, quote, the Titans have shopped first-round tackle Isaiah Wilson, sources say, open to dealing the former Georgia standout after a rough rookie season that included a suspension and a stint on the non-football injury list. A fresh start may benefit all parties. Sounds like TD, who's with us for the TD Power Hour, sounds like Ian Rappaport hasn't been up to date with the latest moving and dealings with Isaiah Wilson. I mean, TD, I'd be stunned if they got anything from anybody with Isaiah Wilson. I think that everybody's just waiting for, even if they're going to take a flyer on Isaiah Wilson, I think they'd just be waiting for you to release him so that they can have like a non-guaranteed, non-nothing, as opposed to an actual contract for a guy.
Yeah, I can't see a team paying to have, paying anything to get Adam Humphrey, or excuse me, I'm thinking of Adam Humphrey, to get Isaiah Wilson. I couldn't see that happening. I mean, what there really isn't much value there as far as all the question marks surrounding him right now.
I mean, the Titans, it looks like the Titans and Isaiah Wilson are heading for a divorce. The question is, who's going to get the kids? And what I mean by that is, you know, how is the grievance process going to play out with the union about his guaranteed money? Because if they strip the guarantees today, the Titans would cut him. And if they don't, then the Titans are kind of in trouble, and he almost has to stay on the roster to avoid taking that extra cap charge. It's a very weird situation.
Yeah, it is very, very weird, and it's something that you don't see happening often. But hopefully for Isaiah Wilson's sake, you know, he could get it together and be productive somewhere, whether it's here in Nashville or with another team. I mean, look, end of the day, he made some mistakes, but he's a human being. We need to be compassionate for each other and wish him the best, you know, whatever situation he ends up in.
Yeah, I mean, a team source told me last week he's not a bad guy. You know, he's got some, you know, off-the-field stuff, but he's not a bad guy. TD, your colleague Diana Russini at ESPN reported today that J.J. Watt currently has an offer on the table believed to be worth $15 and $16 million. She does not know who that is from. What do you make of the latest J.J. Watt rumorage that has been going around the NFL and around the country?
Yeah, I don't really put too much stock in that. If a team is willing to pay him $15 to $16 million, then you know, that's a team that deserves to not do well because, frankly, that's just not a number that I think makes sense on any level. He's not the same player as he was a couple years ago, and it's one of those things where, you know, you can't sign a guy based on his name and reputation. You have to sign him based on, you know, what it is he's going to bring to the table, and his production and impact is not going to be commensurate with that level of pay, $15 to $16 million a year. That's crazy.
My thing, I completely agree with you. I wonder how much of that is them trying to set the market of, hey, see, JJ's got a big offer. Look at this. Hey, if you want JJ, you got it. And then everyone's like, okay, no, we're not doing that. And I wonder if there's a team out there that has the cap space like a Jacksonville or somebody, and is like, well, we know that he won't play for us because we're not very good, but maybe we can buy them with all of our cap space.
You bring guys in that want to play for you. That's really the bottom line.
That's true, too.
You don't just, like, go out of your way to pay money just to get a guy. I mean, sometimes you're going to pay a little bit more, but we're talking about – I mean, look, let's be honest. He's probably going to get, like, $10 to $11 million. Like, we're talking about $5 to $6 million more than what he would have gotten just to get him to want to play for you. Nah, I'm good. I wouldn't do that.
What'd you make of what John Clayton said earlier today on the show, which was he thinks that the Titans are the best fit for JJ because he thinks Buffalo and Cleveland and Green Bay, but really more so Buffalo and Cleveland, would almost have to play JJ at a DT position where he can put his hand in the ground from the DN spot in the Titans scheme.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent observation. He's 100% right. When he said that, Ian and I looked at each other, and I was like, yo, that's a really good point. Because you look, a guy like J.J. Watt with his ability, you want to be able to move him around. You want to play him on the left side and right side. You want him to stand up and rush. You want him down with his hand in the dirt. You want to get those interior reps from him, but you don't want him to always be along the interior. And I think that's really a good thing to have that versatility, and really that would be best for him. So that way you could plug and play him in different situations. So excellent observation by John Clayton, and he's 100% right. That is something that has to be factored into where he goes, and that's something else that goes beyond just the money.
Let's go to your phones. 615-737-1025. Your phones for TD on the TD Power Hour. Tommy is up next and has been waiting patiently on Desmond King. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hey, how you doing, Drew?
Good.
Hey, good. Would it be okay if I discuss both Desmond King and Isaiah Wilson?
Let's do it.
Get right to it.
All right. First of all, Desmond King is an asset to the Titans and needs to stay. Point blank, the Titans defense improved dramatically as soon as he came on the team, and he was an impact in game one. Isaiah Wilson, I think he should be given another chance. He's young. We all make mistakes when we're young. Isaiah Wilson's got the body type for a good offensive lineman. He just hasn't been in the league as long as some of the other guys have. So,
thank you, Tommy. I want to start on the Desmond King front. TD, I kind of see it both sides. I think King was fine, you know, for a sixth-round pick to come in here when you didn't have a corner. I'm not sure he can run. Like, I thought he could run because he was such a good punt returner with the Chargers. I'm not sure he can run like you would need a corner to run. I just can't – I would not commit resources to Desmond King. That's just me.
Desmond King is a very good player. I agree that I wouldn't commit the resources to him. But I'm not going to say that he's not a good player. I mean, he's a very good player. Even though he can't run, I mean, it's not all about being fast. Like, there's other things to it. I'm glad that you noticed that he was not fast but still could be a good returner. And that's something that you have to look at. I just wouldn't do that because I feel the nickel position and what he does really well is blitz off of the edge. He's done that well his whole career. But I think this is where you go back to a guy like Elijah Molden. You know who else would be really good in that situation? He was actually a guest I'm talking with TD, and that's Jacoby Stevens, local guy. You know, yep. He would be a solid, not solely as a nickel, but he's a guy that you could use at times in that situation, but also get a pass rush off the edge, you know, when you want to go to different packages. So there are options that you could go to get that similar type of impact. And that being said, I don't think that should warrant, you know, a $7 to $10 million deal per year that I think King is going to get, and especially for this team that is already pinching pennies and robbing Peter to pay Paul in other areas.
Yeah, it's hard for me to say cut Kenny Vaccaro but then spend money on Desmond King.
Exactly.
Like, that's hard for me. You know, the thing that I think we all know about the secondary, and this is across the league, not just the Titans, you can have the best secondary in the world. If you can't get to the quarterback, it doesn't matter how good your secondary is.
Yeah.
So the Titans are going to have to probably trim a little bit in the secondary in order to hopefully make the secondary better by getting some pass rush on the quarterbacks.
Yeah,
and that's exactly where King probably doesn't fit.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's really the bottom line. That's the bottom line. He doesn't fit there. But the one thing that I will say, and to the caller's point, the defense did get better after Desmond King got there, but it wasn't just because Desmond King. I remember talking to Jeffrey Simmons about it, talking to Malcolm Butler about it as well. they approach things differently, and they kind of learn from trying to overextend themselves to get Desmond King situated. Communication, right? They communicated with everybody, like throughout the defense, like as if everybody was new with each other because they wanted to get Desmond King up to par. They continued to do that even after he was up to par. And then you start to see those small, silly mistakes, like a receiver passing through one zone and into another one and settling down and those type of things. They didn't happen as much. And the defense got better.
TD with us. Coming up next, we'll get back to your texts and your calls. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. But also coming up, Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest mock draft is out. What does TD think of Mel's latest selection for the Titans? That's next. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game. Oh, by the way, Robbie Stanley's hanging out at 6th and Peabody. Robbie, what's going on?
You know, with the colleges, there's so many different guidelines as it relates to, you know, the states, how they're dealing with, you know, the regulations with COVID. So I think that, you know, every state's kind of different, so it's hard to have a uniform, you know, kind of set of rules in place. I do think we're going to have to provide a negative COVID result that, you know, we can have here, and you have a text message of it on your phone or whatever to show the universities when we show up on campus within, I think it's 48 to 72 hours. I think that's pretty much standard, but everything else, you know, where's the pro day going to be? Is it have to be outside in the stadium? Can you have it inside in the bubble if there's inclement weather? What contact can you have with the coaches? I think all that's going to be up to, you know, the individual universities.
That was John Robinson, draft right around the corner after free agency. TD with us for the TD Power Hour. Mel Kiper Jr.'s latest mock draft 2.0 is out, TD, and Mel's making trades.
Yeah.
I mean, that is – it feels almost sacrilegious for Mel Kiper Jr.
Unprecedented.
I mean, Mel has spent – how many years have we watched Mel on TV and heard Mel say, I don't make trades? No, yeah. I know other people want to make trades. I absolutely do not make trades. So I got a rule. I don't make any trades, so no trades. And now here's Mel with trades. It's like, Mel, you're cheating on yourself.
Yeah,
what are you doing?
Todd.
Yeah, he's got great step on the outside, Todd. Now, for the Titans, he's got at 22, very interesting, he's got Gregory Russo, the defensive end out of Miami, at 21, who all the other mockers have Russo way up in the first round ahead of the Titans. Then he's got Jalen Phillips, the other defensive end out of Miami. He's got Jalen Phillips at number 22 to the Titans. And a guy a lot of people have mocked to the Titans, Azeez Ojulari. He's got – I keep mispronouncing that.
Ojulari.
He's got Azeez Ojulari to the Bucks at 32. So, yeah. TD, what do you make of Jalen Phillips and Mel's latest mock, one selection after Gregory Russo to Indianapolis – and Ojulari all the way down at 32 to the Bucs?
Well, let me say this. When he was on Talking with TD a few weeks ago, he had Russo as the guy that the Titans were taking at 22. And when I talked to him, I said, well, why not Jalen Phillips? He's the better player. I feel Jalen Phillips is the top edge guy in this draft, to be frank with you. So at 22... that's an excellent pick. Now, obviously, there are questions about the injury history, right? The concussions. You know, he suffered a terrible wrist injury while he was there at UCLA. He was on a moped and you know, had an accident, car accident. If you could get a healthy guy, that dude is – I don't know if you've gotten to watch him, but he is fun to watch. And it's really interesting because even though he's like a bigger player, he's very quick on his feet. His hands are violent. I like what he does. I've seen him drop back into coverage a little bit. So that pick right there, that's an awesome pick for the Titans. I just wonder if just the way things have gone for this team with you know, some of these picks, I don't know that you can afford to go for a guy who has injury questions just because it's almost like, you know, misfortune has been cast upon this team, right, with their first-round picks. So that's something I wonder. However, all things remaining equal, that's a really good pick. Ojulari, to me, is the most complete edge guy in this draft. And I say that because I've seen him turn around and run with running backs on wheel routes. I've seen him drop back with tight ends. Off the edge, I mean, he's an absolute fastball off the edge The guy has moves, a nice spin move, and some different things like that. So I don't think that he drops down to 32. I think a team will grab him before then. And really, you know, when you look at the Colts with what they're going to end up doing with Justin Houston, that's going to be probably – the Titans are going to probably end up having to take whoever the Colts didn't want as much as the guy that they take at 21. That's how I look at it.
I just wonder why Mel's not making trades in the back end of the first round, because we know they have some of those. If you had to rank, because you said you think Jalen Phillips best edge rusher.
Yeah.
If you had to rank the pass rushing guys, and I know you've been watching tape because, you know, I saw you watching Tutu Atwell tape the other day and had to comment on it.
I was actually watching for Greg Rousseau, and Atwell was like, hey, man, don't forget about me. I got a jetpack on my back.
If you had to rank the pass rushers in this draft, maybe the top three or four that the Titans could get, how would you rank them?
Okay, well, I'll go five. I'll give you five. And for me, it goes Jalen Phillips, Azeez Ojulari, and then this guy, no one is – I'm confused, and I need to post some things about him because no one is talking about this guy. I need to start talking about him, and that's Carlos Boogie Basham. And he is one of those guys that is a big –
Where does he play at? TD, I'm sorry.
That's where I was getting. He's an edge guy. He can stand up. If you watch Wake Forest tape, you'll see him standing up at times. You'll see him – down, you'll see him even lining up over top of the – he does everything. And everything is done with power. And then seeing him firsthand down there at the Senior Bowl, let me tell you something. He was wrecking shop. So he's someone that you need to talk about more. I would – seeing him and Jeffrey Simmons, you know, on the same line, that would be ridiculous. So he's my number three. And then you have Gregory Rousseau. And the thing is with Gregory Rousseau, it was so interesting and fascinating. You have all of the athletic ability, right? He's long. He's a guy who has, you know, quickness, agility. All that is great. But I just don't see him playing with a lot of power. And it's crazy because even when you watch him, he's actually better lining up on the inside than he is on the edge. But if you look at him, you say, oh, man, he's – God made him to be an edge rusher. No, he didn't. No, he is not a better guy off the edge than he is on the inside. And then my fifth guy, and he's going to be on talking. You know what? Let's prelude this. Next week, talking with TD, you heard me mention Elijah Molden multiple times. You've heard me in the past mention Levi Onwuzurike. You've heard me mention Keith Taylor. But this is the fourth guy, Joe Tryon. Next week, we're going to have all four of those guys on. It's going to be a roundtable discussion. We're just going to talk some shop, you know. And Joe Tryon is actually my number five guy. My guy, Emory Hunt, he compared him to Montez Sweat. And after he said that, I can't unsee it. A guy who plays with length and power, it just coming off the edge. He's really good on stunts. He has a spin move, too. Joe Tryon is a very underrated player no one's really talking about as well. But he would be my fifth option. And there are other guys, right? Because I know you're going to ask me, why didn't you mention Kwity Paye? I'm not high on Kwity Paye. You know, he's athletic, he's strong, but he's not twitchy enough for me, and he's not someone that I think will give this Titans team what they need. Patrick Jones is a guy that I do like. I've mentioned him, Rashad Weaver. Also, a couple guys who I've been on talking with TD over the last couple weeks, Dalen Hayes and Jonathan Cooper. They both met with the Titans. Their meetings were very good. Dalen Hayes actually is a guy who has trained with Brandon Jordan. And he met Bud Dupree through him, and he said that his game really resembles Bud Dupree. So that's something to look at. Jonathan Cooper resembles – he said the comp that he has gotten most is actually one of Mike Vrabel's favorite players that he's coached, and that's Whitney Mercilus.
So just to recap the five, Jalen Phillips, Miami, would be number one.
Right.
Azeez Ojulari, Georgia, two.
Good job.
Wake Forest, Carlos Boogie Basham, three. Did I get that right?
Correct.
Four, Gregory Rousseau, Miami, who yes. A lot of people have way up there in the draft, and Joe Tryon, Washington, five.
Correct.
Okay. Texture to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. Sam says, I've seen reports about Jalen Phillips not having the passion for football, so I can't see Robinson going that route if that's the case. I haven't seen that. I've seen the concussions thing, and concussions scare me because if I were a parent and my kid had a bunch of concussions, that would scare me.
Yeah, I mean, concussions are – look, Adam Humphries was released. You know what I mean? It's definitely something to be concerned about. But here's the thing. To answer the questions about him not loving football, this guy, before he got to Miami, he was out of football. He wasn't doing a thing. He was working, just a regular job. And then by chance, he met with a coach, and that coach referred him to Miami. He got there. He put on a good 30 pounds or so. Here's the thing. Jared, if I tell you, you know what, you're not going to be allowed to do, I'm not going to let you do a show for a full year. You're going to be sick that full year, right? Because you love doing this. You love talking on the mic. When you get that opportunity to do it again after it's taken from you for a year, guess what you're going to do? Appreciate it that much more. I don't question his love for the game whatsoever. That's just me.
Let's go to Kinston, who's up next here on Stillman
right
and Company. Oh, man, Kinston is a true fan. Thank you for calling, Kinston. Go ahead.
Man, I appreciate y'all, boys. Man, what's going on, Jay? What's going on, TD?
Hey, what's up, man? Kinston. What it do?
Hey, man, you know, I'm trying to watch as much fam as I can, man. I know where you come from with the Quinny Pay thing because I didn't like him at first, but I watched him last night, TD, and I'm like, man, this guy got cat-like agility for a guy to be as big as he is. But my question is, do you guys think more cuts are going to come? Because I was thinking, you know, it's been 8 weeks since the season ended, 2 weeks before free agency. I was thinking if they were going to cut guys, it would be kind of in a cluster, kind of one transaction. You know, maybe Kenny Vaccaro with Adam Humphries, maybe with Malcolm Butler, not maybe, you know, separated. So do you think those guys are safe, or do you think with the 2 weeks before free agency, more are going to come? And I'll take the comments off the air. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Kenson.
I think the Grim Reaper is lurking, man. Mm-hmm. And he's going to get on the phone with some more people. I definitely think there are going to be more cuts. I like Vaccaro just as a person, right, and a player. I love the way he plays. But I think that's going to be a move that they're going to look to make, and it's going to save them money. And I know you feel Ben Jones is a guy too. So, there's going to be at least one or two more. They have to do it right now because there are other needs that are on the team that they don't have depth from, right? They could work from a position of depth and release that to address a position of need.
I just feel like they're going to get guys to take pay cuts too. I think they're going to round in a bunch of guys. Like Jones is going to take a pay cut. Jones is not going to make 7.2 this year.
I'm glad you've come around on not getting rid of Jones, man.
I think it's one of those things where you almost call Tannehill and Henry and those guys and say, hey, like, we're going to ask this guy to take a pay cut. We're going to ask that guy to take a pay cut. Can we do something with the deals? You know, and they'll get something out of it. Everybody will get something out of whatever they do. But I think the Titans, that core is so tight. I think you're going to see some of those dudes say, no, I've got my money. You know, look, everybody at some level, it feels like, has taken some kind of a pay cut or haircut because of the pandemic. Football, certainly no different. Okay, we'll get back to your phone, 615-737-1025, and we'll get TD's thoughts on some of the latest around the league. That is next. It's the TD Power Hour right here on Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game. Still in the company, it's delivered by TriStar Moving. It's the TD Power Hour. TD, we'll get your thoughts on all the biggest happenings around the league, but the people want to talk to TD, and you know what? I'm never one to tell them not to listen to Talking with TD or to participate in Talking with
TD.
Right. So Chris is up next. Titans in Truth is in the building. Chris,
another one of my guys.
Chris, when's the last time we heard from you?
It has been a while. It has been a while. And, you know, I definitely try to catch the show as much as I can. Work is crazy, but, TD is always good to catch up with you, Jared, you too. You know, I was listening to y'all just now and you talk about some of the edge rushers and TD, get on me if you've mentioned this already. What about Joseph Osai from Texas? Very violent, very relentless, can be an extremely disruptive guy. He jumps off the page in every game. I like what you said about Joe Tryon because I honestly did not really know much about Joe Tryon until I started watching a little bit of film on him. And I have to admit, yeah, very, very impressed. Jalen Phillips, the concussion thing does scare me to death with him, but he is extremely talented. Ojulari, the only problem I have with Ojulari, he went to Georgia. That's about
Chris, rule number one. Never scout by school. Rule number two, never scout by school. Number three, guess what it is?
Never scout by school.
Correct.
Thank you for your time, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Hey, you know what's funny about that story, TD? And we'll get to his question about Joseph Asai in a second. Floyd told me, I asked him, I said, how did everybody miss on Aaron Rodgers? He goes, Tedford had had like three quarterbacks come out go in the first round.
Yeah, Kyle Bowler.
We all just figured, you know, hey, you know, Tedford gets these first round quarterbacks and that's what happens. And so to TD's point, never scout by school. What do you think about Joseph Asai, Texas? Because I've heard his name come up as a guy that maybe a third round pick, second round pick might be a good fit for the Titans.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I've gotten a lot of questions about Osai. And I remember talking to Matt Miller about him, and he raved about him. I'm not really high on him. I'm not. And my problem is he's very stiff. And I just think if you're going to be a guy, like if you have to be, and I mentioned it with Quiddy Pay, you have to be more twitchy for me to be someone that is going to get to the quarterback. And I don't really see that with him. I watched his games. There were times where he just, you know, for lack of better words, just kind of disappeared. And there were stretches. I watched a good four games, and I watched wanting to like him, right? Because,
right.
You know, all of the stuff that I had heard, I was like, hey, look. I wasn't there. So that's what I think of him. I mean, he could end up being a good player. I'm not saying he won't. But the stiffness for me, it really bothers me. And when you're coming off the edge, you need to be able to turn that corner. You need to be loose and have that ankle flexing, you know, that a guy like Harold Landry has. A guy like Derek Barnett had that really too, just to kind of be able to run sideways, right, and be able to get up underneath these linemen and just kind of bend yourself and come off that edge. And I didn't really see him doing that, being able to turn the corner the way that you need to. And that's something, honestly, that is actually prevalent, and you're going to love that I'm saying this, but that's something that you see from Jadeveon Clowney. And that's why he's better rushing the passer from the inside than from the edge, because he's not that change of direction, quick, twitchy type of player that you normally see off of the successful edge defenders.
Okay, we'll get back to your calls, 615-737-1025. But we got to go around the league with TD. We're only going to have 30 seconds, so TD, pop it in as soon as you can. We're going to go topic by topic by topic. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay, the Houston Texans are dug in. They are not trading Deshaun Watson. Are you buying what they're selling?
No, because you could be as dug in as you want to. I've been in situations where I was dug in, but guess what? After a certain point, I had to give way. And I think that's what the Texans are in. They're in a situation where, yeah, they say they're dug in, but when the stuff really starts to hit the fan, it's going to be time to move on.
Okay. What do we make of Russell Wilson and Seattle and their marriage?
Yeah, I mean, are they headed towards, are there some irreconcilable differences that are going on there? I wonder. But it's interesting. I don't see how a team that's winning like Seattle is, I don't see how it could get to that point where a guy like Russell Wilson that loves that city and is just so embedded there would want to leave.
Kind of feels to me like it's a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to say coddled Russell Wilson, but, you know, they handled him a certain way, and now he's got more power, more money, and no trade clause handling it another way.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of on Russ's side. Outside of the Titans, who is the best fit for J.J. Watt?
Ooh, man. You got me there. You know what? Let's go Cleveland. I'm going to go Cleveland. And he could be a guy that, you know, opposite. Imagine having to face that line with Myles Garrett and J.J. Watt on there. And I think he's a guy that could come in. The Browns are already established, right? They have their leaders. They have their set. So I say Cleveland. I say Cleveland because he wouldn't have to be that dude, absolutely. He could be one of the guys.
Mel Kiper Jr.'s mock draft has five quarterbacks going in the top 10, including trades with Zach Wilson going number 2. Devontae Smith goes 3. Kyle Pitts goes 4. And then Penei Sewell out of Oregon goes number 5. Trevor Maddich, ESPN college football analyst, said on our show he thinks Sewell is one of the best left tackle products he has seen in years, maybe even in a decade. Is Penei Sewell at Cincinnati the best non-quarterback in this draft?
I think for Cincinnati, yes, because you got to protect that investment by the name of Joe Burrow. So I'll say yes.
I mean, I don't know anything about Sewell. I just think that if I'm the Jets, like I know, you know, Mel's got him taking Kyle Pitts
got
at four.
Becton.
I know, but I'm saying, I mean, imagine having the two best left. Like, let's say, and I think Becton's really good and athletic. What if they had the two best tackles in the league? I mean, then you could run the ball and you could pass on every play, and there'd be no way to get to your quarterback. But I am with you on Becton.
Yeah, and it's a question: who will flip and play right side? You see what happened in Baltimore, right? Zeus yep. Brown, he
and now he
Jr.
wants out.
Yeah. So,
and then okay, last one on the around the league question for TD: Mel Kiper Jr. No defensive players in the top 10 of his draft. In the top 9, the first defensive player he has is Patrick Surtain, the second, out of Alabama. Do you think that is crazy in this year's draft?
No, because there are so many really good offensive guys. And, you know, the quarterbacks always get pushed up. You know, I'm not one who is of the Mac Jones in the top half of the first round. I'm not one in that camp. But, I mean, it's probably going to happen. So, I would say just because of how many offensive guys, I mean, you got a tight end that will go top 10. He may even go top six. He may go six to the Eagles. So I would say, yes, it's within reason for that to happen.
By the way, Tom Pelissero said, NFL Network, said that the Texans remain unwilling to discuss Deshaun Watson with other teams, some of whom have resorted to leaving voicemails with trade offers, according to sources. Watson briefly spoke to David Culley recently, but the two haven't met in person. Houston's not budging. We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, really.
I mean, we'll see how long. Because when you have no cap space and you can't sign a quarterback because your quarterback doesn't want to be there, but if he shows up and you're over the cap, you're in trouble. Or you can't draft a quarterback because you have no picks. Eventually, you have to make a decision one way or another. TD, always good to see you, my man. Best hour of the week, the TD Power Hour. And, of course, we will see you next week for the TD Power Hour.
Yeah, man, appreciate you. It's too bad. Matt, I wanted to get to you with the LB prospect call. We'll get to it at some point. Tweet me.
Always tweet TD and always listen to Talking with TD. And always always listen to Talking with TD, and always listen to TD on our station and follow him and everything else as you all can do. We will get to your phones, though. 615-737-1025. Plus, Mel Kiper Jr., you heard what TD said about the pick of Jalen Phillips to the Titans. I got a thought on it based off of TD's thought. We'll get to that coming up next. Stillman & Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. Robbie Stanley is hanging out at 6th and Peabody. What's up, Robbie?